And a pleasure to welcome back to the programme Hong Kong's and Morning Brew's very own visa geezer, Steve Barnes. How are you doing?
Hello, Phil.
Welcome along. Love your hair.
Cold.
No, it's nuts, isn't it? I want to go straight in today with an email from Steve, one of our listeners, and it goes like this. By the way, if you've got any visa questions or queries, whatever they may be, doesn't matter if you think they're a bit daft, drop us a line or put something on our Morning Brew Facebook page. It's morningbrew@rthk.hk. So, here we go, Steve. He says, bit of a tricky one, as I don't have all the details, but I'd really like to try and find out and understand the truth of the situation from Steve. It looks like a situation of double standards with a dependency visa for a Filipino passport holder supported by her Filipino husband, who's resident here. She's been granted multiple dependency visas over the past year, but each visa has only been granted for 3 months, which then obviously has to be renewed. I remember many cases of dependency visas which, to my knowledge, are usually granted on a one-year basis, especially whenever there's a British passport holder applying. It really appears that she's being victimised for holding a Filipino passport. Can you suggest, Steve, what this lady could do to at least get a full year's dependency visa?
OK, well, you know, to get a dependence visa, the sponsor, in this instance her husband, needs to be able to show, as part of the application, that he can put a roof over her head and food on her table.
Mm-hmm.
And normally the immigration department will then grant a dependent visa that's commensurate with the limit of stay which the sponsor has. So assuming that in this instance the husband has got an employment visa, and then normally the dependent visa of the spouse just follows the limit of stay that the employment visa sponsor, in this case the husband, has.
Right.
The fact that the immigration department are only granting her a 3 month limit of stay on each occasion suggests to me that what is happening is that actually the immigration department are doing them as a family a favour, because they're allowing them to be together in an instance where possibly the ability for the husband to financially provide for the spouse on the strength of the income that he's got isn't sufficient to warrant the immigration department to give her the dependent visa length of stay that ordinarily would be issued. So just reading between the lines, I suspect that this gentleman probably has a marginal income, and the immigration department have not been satisfied that there is sufficient proof of means within the family income circumstances to allow them to grant her a dependent visa on the normal terms. So they're just reserving the right to keep having a look at what's going on in terms of the income scenario to make sure that, in fact, she can indeed be supported financially by the husband. And I suspect that that's what's going on.
All right. If you've got any similar stories, do get in touch, because the question that our listener is raising is that, are they, you know, being racist to the guys? You know, and that's a very obvious thing to jump to, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's
more and more these days we're seeing.
The streets are wet, you know, it must be raining.
Yeah, gotcha. I know. But that's what he's asking anyway. But it strikes me, you know, to the level which he can support her. I mean, the boys have given her a dependent visa. So it's yes or no. It's on or off. It's not how much food can you put on our table, on their table. We've decided that you're okay to stay.
Well,
why 3 months?
Well, flip it the other way. Let's say the immigration department conclude that he really doesn't have enough means available to support his wife, and they say, no, we're not going to give you the visa.
Mm-hmm.
What would the situation be in that instance? Would you rather have the 3 months and just keep going back and proving to yourself continuously that you can support your family? Or would you rather be separated, knowing the immigration department said, no, we can't approve it. So again, I'm reading between the lines. I don't know anything about this case. I know how the immigration department tend to operate. When I hear that story, it suggests to me that's what's going on.
All right. Well, I hope that helps, Steve, emailer. Interesting one, this. I wonder, we don't know whether each time she goes back for a renewal, whether they happily say sure, or they go, well, there's another one.
Well, at the end of the day, does she get a passport endorsed? If she gets a passport endorsed, it's done, right? Irrespective of the experience en route.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's unusual. I mean, it's not the first time I've heard of this, but it's certainly unusual. It doesn't happen all the time, but I suspect that that's what's going on.
All right then, Steve. Well, look, if you've got any questions, do get in touch. He's going to be around for 10 minutes or so. You wanted to talk about something completely different today, which is startups.
Yeah, I don't know if you've plugged into what's happening sort of at a grassroots sort of entrepreneur startup scenario in this town, but there's a lot of activity where foreign nationals and indeed local people are really getting involved in. You could sort of imagine it to be a kind of a Silicon Valley sort of type scenario where startups are
emerging. Very hard.
Well, yeah. I mean, people have ideas. They've got a certain amount of funding, not huge amounts. They've got a lot of endeavour within them, and they want to pursue the opportunity to change the world. So they don't take normal jobs, and they hunker down, and they take the minimum amount of cash that they've got, and use whatever available resources there are within their means to really give a good shot at getting a business off the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, from a startup perspective and when it comes to immigration, is that normally startups operate on the lean philosophy. And the lean philosophy is where you take just the right amount of resources that you've got available to you. You expend those resources in key and critical areas, but you don't spend any more money than that. You just do what you need to do.
Yeah.
It's not that you're doing it on the cheap. You're just taking limited resources and spending them smartly.
Right.
The problem is that if you're a foreign national and you come to Hong Kong and you want to engage in a startup with that sort of philosophy, it's sort of the antithesis of what the immigration department are looking for, because to get an investment visa to pursue that startup activity as a foreign national, you have to be able to show that you can, quote, make a substantial contribution to the economy of Hong Kong.
Same in other countries too.
It is, that's true. The thing, though, is that, you know, the lean philosophy, which and young entrepreneurs bring to a startup scenario, mm-hmm. doesn't correlate with what the immigration department are looking for from a substantial contribution perspective. And the resources that are required to pass the approvability test are typically not available in a lean-run startup situation. So the question is begged is, does current immigration policy actually support the idea of startups, given that, you know, the whole world seems to be talking about how important startups are?
Would a way around it be, because you said, you know, foreign nationals, well, the obvious thing is working with somebody who's here already and they somehow become your guarantor?
No, it doesn't work like that. You've still independently got to be able to show you can make a substantial contribution.
What's the way around? Not the way around it. What's a solution?
Well,
in theory,
the solution is to adjust your anticipated business model to reflect the reality that the Immigration Department are expecting more than just lean. So you need to think about raising more money than perhaps you have been able to raise until now. You need to think about potentially sort of fast-tracking some of the decisions that you've been making in terms of, you know, your rollout pace and how you're going to deploy the available financing that you have into Hong Kong in such a way so that this money is actually being expended. And whilst you might not be able to tick all the boxes in the classically understood investment visa situation, you can at least show to the Immigration Department that you've got the kind of money that you need and that you're expending and not just sitting on it, and you're not effectively just cooling your heels until the next spending opportunity comes along.
All right then, a bit more specific advice here, Steve. If you could say to these people, I really think you need to focus on this bit,
yeah,
what do you think it would be?
It's always the same thing. It's get business premises that are suitable for your business circumstances. Make sure that you've got sufficient financing to be able to fund your plan over the course of the first 12 to 24 months. And whatever you do, ensure that you're clearly setting a pathway for the creation of local employment opportunities.
I'm very happy that our fellow's written back and given us a bit more meat on this thing, because he heard what you said. He says, all very well explained by Steve. He said, and if this is the case, then this is a case of victimisation based on a person's status within society. The guy is a resident here and works in a restaurant, so grants low-level income. But he has been putting food on the table and a roof over their heads for the past year, totally biased on any level, if you ask me, and still double standards, whether if the colour of someone's skin or level of affluence. Maybe one for Steve Vines to have a chat about. Well, that'll be tomorrow. But Steve Barnes, being a legally trained geezer, isn't going to, you know, your answer is going to be down the line, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, those are comments that he's entitled to make, but I haven't seen the file. I don't really know what's going on, but the Immigration Department don't work.
What would you
like
tell him to do anyway? I mean, sorry, just recap. What would you say? Nice, simple thing. It's his mate. What would you suggest?
Well, just write to the Immigration Department.
What's going on?
Yeah, write to the Immigration Department at the time of the next extension and seek to understand why she's only getting a three-month limit of stay, and then seek if there is any kind of additional documentation or anything else that can be adduced in the currency of the application to afford her a longer period of stay, and then see what the Immigration Department say.
All right, let's get back to your startups. So tell me a bit more. What's going down?
Well, startup activity around town is kind of like at an all-time high. There are a number of different startup groups, startup Startups HK. There's Start Me Up HK.
What happens?
Okay, yeah, Startups HK is a group founded, I think, in 2009 by a bunch of entrepreneurs that were trying to create a kind of a domestic ecosystem to allow young people, indeed older people for that matter, to congregate and to share resources and to support the whole idea of new startup activity. Then, of late, there's been a new organization called Startup Grind that held its first event last Tuesday, the 11th of February. And
Startup Grind.
Startup Grind. Yeah, it's a Google sort of sponsored group of young entrepreneurs. They've got about 60 or 70 chapters around the world, and they come together and they share experiences and they encourage people on and get really smart people talking about how they've been successful going from a startup to a pretty major exit. Invest HK are active in this space with Start Me Up HK, I think it's called, where they're encouraging startup
activity along those
lines.
They've been very different to other government organisations for many years, but it's still a government organisation, and you've got to go through the rings of fire to get any money out of these geezers.
Well, Invest HK, I don't think they disperse funds. I think what they do is they provide support and guidance and resource and information
and
about
people,
how to navigate the government
labyrinth. They want people to spend their in Hong Kong.
They want to encourage welcome investment, that's right. Yeah. And they do a good job. They do a really good job. And I know that there's discussions between Invest HK and the Immigration Department at the moment, because I met with an Invest HK senior representative earlier this week, and they said that they're making representations to the Immigration Department to try and have the Immigration Department reflect the reality that startups are what they are, and perhaps a certain amount of improved handling of such applications might be entertained.
What kind of industries, you've been doing a bit of research on this, what kind of industries are we talking about starting up?
It's all technology. It's all the app space, all to do with websites, all to do with smartphones, all this kind of stuff.
Nothing...
It's all new ways of doing traditional things using creatively disruptive business models in terms of technology that's available to everybody in one's hand these
all
days.
Right. Have you noticed any other stuff though, because we talked a couple of times ago about people like from the F&B industry wanting to get the chef of their choice from Africa or Australia and having a problem. So I'm just wondering if it goes into other areas.
No, I mean a lot of service businesses. They seem to be coming across my desk these days. Kind of reflection of stuff that's worked in other countries. An entrepreneur has picked up those ideas from those other countries and think that they can have a go at it in Hong Kong because those kind of services aren't available here. I've been doing this for 20 years, right, Phil? I mean, I've seen the entire gamut of different sort of activities that have been going on depending on where we are in the world in economy. I can say that really the startup activity now all takes a particular form, and it's very different from most people who were starting business, say, 15 or 20 years ago.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I was just thinking as you were speaking, I'm like, wow, what would the startup activity have been in, say, 1975?
I'm not that old, Phil.
No, I know, but just in theory, a bit of history.
If you think about it, we went from sort of the Vietnam War playground to a manufacturing centre to a banking and services economy, and now we're moving to something else, and it's got to be technology at the end of the day, because that's what the future's all about. And where we are in terms of startup activity right now, clearly the focus is on technology.
Another area, you said to me that the Immigration Department perhaps might think about addressing this in a different way. Will there come a time, do they have it within their power to say, no, we've got too many of these?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they don't need to state it in so many terms. They just need to implement that in how they would issue approvals. They got all the discretion that they need to say yes or no to a particular visa being issued. But remember, the policy is to promote welcome investment. So, of course, who determines what's welcome investment is sort of outside of my remit and what's outside of your remit. Mm. But the Immigration Department don't turn away, in the main, young people or older people that have got resources and they've got a decent plan for a business and can show that they're going to be able to benefit Hong Kong. It is a very positive environment rather than a negative environment. It's important, for us to appreciate that.
I suppose just before we wrap up, the issue here is, changing with the times. These various departments have to change with the march of time, the change in technology, change in habits,
absolutely,
demographics, older population.
Couldn't agree more, Phil. And if you look back over the last 10 or 15 years, you've seen the Immigration Department respond to changes in times. You know, they've responded to the fact that we're now, you know, part of China again.
Definitely responded to that one.
But not so much in terms of the visitors that come across the border, the mainlanders, but the, you know, the admission of mainland talents and professionals scheme. It used to be the Brits that got privileged. Yeah. Now it's not so much the mainlanders that get privileged, but there's a programme that's specifically set up to attract the brightest and the best.
From the mainland,
who have good job offers.
And
here,
it all says it there. This is what it's for,
that's
so
right,
there's no argument.
Quality migrant admission scheme, same thing again. Wanted to attract top-notch talent.
Yep.
And we didn't have that programme a few years ago. Now we've got it. The capital investment entrance scheme, which is now at $10 million, used to be at $6.5 million. You know, 10, 15 years ago, we didn't have that programme. So the Immigration Department do absolutely move with the times. There's no doubt about that.
What do you reckon Hong Kong is looking for now? You've mentioned one thing. You said apps, right, technology. Is there anything else, just in your experience, that Hong Kong seems to be looking for a little bit more?
No, I don't think it's so much that what's being looked for. I think it's external points of view being implemented in Hong Kong by sort of fresh talent coming to Hong Kong and seeing opportunities because they know that things work elsewhere,
yeah,
and they're not available here. And so there's the arbitrage opportunity. It's time to, you know, copy some of those ideas or implement some of that data in Hong Kong finally. So I think there is this general sort of trend that's going on that I'm observing in,
yeah,
any
good
event.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've got your finger on the pulse. Do you know much about the arts business? I mean, certainly artists as in musicians, performers, whatever, from America, Australia and England, particularly America, the word is, hey, try Asia. It's really cooking there.
Well,
and we're talking top-line performance.
Yeah, I mean, this is all sort of entertainer visas, and by implication, these visas are just short-term in the main. You know, you come for a few weeks or whatever, and you get a short period of stay to be able to do that.
And is that easy to get?
Yeah, straightforward. More widely, though, I have to say, I'm seeing a lot of, like, real arts type, classic arts type business opportunities emerging in Hong Kong. I've got three or four clients on the go at the moment that have all got something really interesting in terms of bringing an art discipline or a view of art or an appreciation of art that they
It's not
believe.
Just about computers, I mean, basically.
No, there's, yeah, there's, yeah, people are still well-heeled and well-dressed.
All right, Steve, thanks very much as always for coming up. We'll chat in a few weeks. Check him out, hongkongvisageezer.com. Steve Barnes, thanks so much.